to the book of Genesis, chapter 18. We're going to read verses 1 through 10, then jump down to verse 16, read through 33. Most of you are not accustomed to me having a real long portion of Scripture to read, and I don't usually find the Lord telling me to do that, but that's where we're going today. I do want to mention, first of all, before we get into the message, we had a special prayer request that we forgot to mention to you. This last week, Brother Jerry Asbury and his family lost Brother Jerry's grandson, killed in a bus crash over in Carlisle County. Probably several of you read about it or heard about it on the news. The young man, Logan, was 6 years old. Bus ran down a steep slope, turned over. He was the only individual thrown halfway out of the bus and killed when the bus fell on him. The rest of the kids had to walk over his body to get out of the bus. Pray for Brother Jerry Asbury and his family this week, especially Logan's mom and dad, Melissa and Kenny Simpson. It's a real tough thing to lose a loved one, even if they've lived out a fullness of years. But this is especially tough. This family, this young lad was the most pleasant young lad that you could ever meet, full of energy and life. And all of a sudden, the Lord made his mind up that he wanted him to be with him, and that was the end of his life here on earth. So pray for Brother Jerry and his family this week as they go through this awful time. Genesis chapter 18, verses 1 through 10, then 16 through 33. And our subject today is when the Lord comes calling. When the Lord comes calling. Verse 1. And the Lord appeared unto Abram in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. After that, ye shall pass on, for therefore are ye come to your servant. And they said, So do as thou hast said. And Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah and said, Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran unto the herd and fetched a calf tender and good and gave it unto a young man, and he hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed, and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. Now down to verse 16. And the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. And the Lord said, Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which is coming to me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And Abraham answered and said, Behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, If I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. And he spake unto him yet again and said, Peradventure there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. And he said unto him, Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure there shall 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, Behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet, but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham. And Abraham returned unto his place. Lots of folks think that this particular account of Abraham's visit by the Lord and two angels, that because the Lord and the angels spoke to Abraham, as it were, face to face, that the account doesn't really have any relevance for Christians today, because the Lord doesn't come and visibly speak to us face to face in the form that He did here to Abraham. But what I find when I study the Bible about this account is that this perfectly typifies God's coming, calling on His people in any age. Because I think every one of you that have ever experienced a special coming with a message from God to your heart and soul, understand how this can really type that very kind of event. Every one of you that have ever had the Lord draw your attention to Himself in the midst of a day, in the midst of work, in the midst of sleep or some other time, and said, I've got something to tell you. I want to talk to you about something. It was as though the Lord was there right in front of you and was saying things to you that caught your attention like no other time caught your attention. Now, I believe that we can use this account of Abraham to talk to ourselves today about these kinds of events when the Lord comes calling. Now, we know that the Lord doesn't visit us because He's with us always by His Holy Spirit. But all of us know that there are times in our lives when we're going about our daily routine, we're, as it were, like Abraham, sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day, just taking some cool time. And the Lord suddenly pulls us to Himself and speaks to us with such force that it's almost an audible voice. And when He does this, this is the kind of time that Abraham went through here in our text. And I want us to think about this experience of Abraham and see if we can't find identity with it. See if we can't find something here about Abraham's event and experience that'll help us to stand up and pay attention when the Lord comes to us in times like these. Because believe me, brothers and sisters, if you're saved by the grace of God, the Lord will come like this at some time in your life. At some time or other, He will speak to you with such force and power that it'll be as though those angels and the Lord Himself were standing in front of you and suddenly come calling. So with that in mind, I want you to notice, going back to the first part of the chapter, first of all, that the Lord's visit wasn't specifically about any of Abraham's personal business when He came calling. This visit by the Lord and the angels was not a visit to come and talk to Abraham about some specific thing going on in his life. It had other things to do with. It had to do with Sodom and Gomorrah, if you will, and the cities of the plain. Now, I know that in verse 17, he talks about In verse 17 of Genesis chapter 17, and all through that chapter, he talks about having plans to give Sarah a child, to give Abraham a child, a son of promise. And so, this reiteration of this thing that he does in our chapter is not new news to Abraham. And it's not the business for which he came. It's just a re-emphasis of the promise that he'd made to Abraham. Because he'd already told him about that. So, regardless of the fact that he did deal with Abraham about some private business, if you will, that was not the main reason he was there. And there's an object lesson in that for us. And that is that we as God's people, when the Lord comes calling, ought not to interpret every movement of the Lord in our life as something that has direct association and speaks expressly to something about us. Very often, I believe that if you go through the Bible and look, very often the Lord's special attendance to people, His special calling upon people, turns out to be something to do with somebody else, some other event, something that that individual may be involved with, but it doesn't directly involve his personal business. And I don't think we ought to take the Lord's coming to us with a message as something that has to do with all about us. Because odds are it's not going to be that way. His coming to us very often is by way of impressing our mind with a message, a directive, or a reminder about somebody else's business. Let's always keep that in mind. There's a tendency to get selfish or self-centered when the Lord shows special favor to us. And we have a tendency to think it's all about us. It's just in us to feel that way. But we don't want to get that way. We don't want to think that way. We want to kind of be like Abraham. And if you'll notice that Abraham really doesn't say much at all about the re-emphasis of the promise of the coming of a son, he talks about something else when he begins to talk about the Lord, talk to the Lord, and we'll get into that in a minute, Lord willing. So his coming to us is very often about a completely different matter than what involves us. I want to illustrate that by something that happened to me years ago. Now, I think I may have told this story from this pulpit. I was out in my front yard one day. I don't remember what I was doing. I was cutting grass or trimming a tree or something right out in the front yard. And the front yard had a big curve on it down there where we lived in Callaway County. And the curve curved toward my house and then curved away from my house right as it got to my driveway. And as I was standing out there and there was a big bank on going up to the roadbed in my front yard. It was almost 4 or 5 foot tall right there where I was working. And as I was standing there working on whatever it was, I heard a car come around the curve. And I was about as far from here to the door, or maybe closer to the road when that happened. And I heard the car start squalling its tires. And I looked up, and that car was up on two wheels, seemingly. And it hit a big hump over by my driveway and went airborne. It went into the air and jumped. It sailed across the road and hit on the other right-of-way and ran off down in the field and came to a stop down there just before it hit some really big trees. Now, I recognized the driver when he sailed off through the air. And it was an elderly man that was noted for being ungodly and never having made a profession of faith. I don't know if his feet ever entered a church. And when that car hit that field over there and went running off down through that field, God said, "Go witness to that man." And it was a powerful force of the Lord standing before me. It was as though I was Abraham and the Lord came calling. And you know that impetus that God gave me by His Spirit wasn't about me. It was about that poor lost sinner down there in that car. And I just threw down what I was doing and went straight over there. He was getting out of his car and he was kind of shook up about what had just happened. But he wasn't hurt. He didn't hit anything. He just kind of came to a rest down there in that field. And I walked up to him and said, "Roy, are you okay?" And he said, I, I'm fine. I don't know what happened. I kind of lost control of the car and it just ran off the road. I said, Roy, I need to talk to you about the Lord. I said, you came real close to dying just now. And I need to talk to you because I know you've never gone to church. And I know you've never professed Christ. Now I've got to tell you about my Savior. And I stood there and I kept that man's attention and told him about the Lord. And I made sure that he understood clearly what life and death was all about, what eternity was all about, what Christ's salvation was all about, what the crucifixion was all about. And I believe I ended up taking him home. And I let him out of the car and went back to my business at my house. And 2 weeks later, the man fell dead of a heart attack. What was that? What was that all about? Why was it that the Lord suddenly came calling to me and said, not be concerned about his whether he's injured or not, but go witness to that man. What was that? The Lord came calling and he spoke to me about something that was more somebody else's business than mine. That man needed to hear about the Lord. I don't know if he trusted Christ. Haven't got a clue. And that 2 weeks before he died, I never heard about him going to church anywhere or making a profession of faith. He never came back around me. So I don't know. I don't know what happened to him. But I know what the Lord did that day. And when the Lord comes calling, it's always exactly right. And this was the right time for the Lord to come calling to Abraham that day. I want you to notice that when he came calling, Abraham was sitting in the tent of the door just resting. You ever notice when you've got just a little bit of time to have a breather is the time that you think most about the things of God? You ever notice how it's almost impossible when you're doing your work or you're involved in some recreational activity or you're involved in watching TV or you're involved in playing with the grandkids or the kids. Have you ever noticed how hard it is to think about spiritual things, to just meditate on God? But Abraham was sitting there cooling off in the heat of the day. He didn't have anything to do until it got cool enough he could get out and do a little bit more work, probably. And that was the right time for the Lord to come calling because the Lord knows when we are right for approaching. But listen, brothers and sisters, that does not mean that we need to only look for the Lord to come calling when we're sitting in the heat, in the shade, resting from the heat of the day. But it does tell us that when we sit down and have a little private, a little quiet time, we ought to look for some message from God. We ought to look for God to speak to us. We'd open our minds and our hearts to the things of God, lest we miss the Lord coming calling, lest we miss that blessed occurrence. So it was the right time, but you know what? It was the wrong time of day as it related to human behavior. Because when humans are resting from the heat of the day in a shady place, we're all inclined not to care much about getting up and starting moving around. What the Lord came, that day the Lord came, it called upon Abraham to get up and get about some business, didn't it? So in the sense of human comfort, it was the wrong time. And so let me just say that it was the right time, and it was the wrong time. It was the right time for one reason. It was the wrong time for another reason. But the reason it was the wrong time has to do with the human flesh. We ought not to ever let that so-called wrong time interfere with hearing the Lord. I noticed that Abraham didn't let the heat of the day slow him down one bit. He got right about the business of God. Now, we find that we can get preoccupied in our times, and this preoccupation itself can drive away spiritual awareness and productivity. If we get too preoccupied, we may forget that we have an opportunity, day or night, hot or cold, resting or working, we have an opportunity to hear something from God. But there's always something that would drive away our spiritual awareness and our spiritual productivity. It has to do with the things of this world. Do you remember in the parable of the sower, in Mark chapter 4, that Jesus said something about this very case? And what He said when He was describing how the Word of God getting sown often ends up totally unprofitable, listen how He said it. He said, "In the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust of other things entering in, choke the Word, and it becometh unfruitful." Doesn't that aptly describe exactly what happens? And it can happen anywhere, anytime. It's just a description of how the Word of the Lord, the things of the Lord, attention to the Lord's business can get snatched away by the cares of the world, by other people talking, by being involved in something else, by not paying attention, by being obsessed with making a living, by being all caught up in wanting something in the world, want, and your focus is on that. That's what Jesus meant when He called it the lusts of this world. In Luke chapter 21, in verse 34, the Lord gives us a warning about this. Listen, when He was talking about His imminent return, listen what He said. Listen, because it's a message about this very tendency in human being. He says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares." Take heed to yourselves, unless maybe you're overcharged with overdoing something. That's what that Greek word for surfeiting is there. It's not just about eating, it's about overdoing with anything. And drunkenness and cares of this life. We can get so caught up in what's around us and what we're doing and what we're trying to get to and where we're trying to go that we forget all about the Lord. And we're not in a good spiritual frame at that time for the Lord to come calling. I sometimes wonder as I think about that, and I know the Lord's sovereign. He can stop us dead in our tracks. But I wonder how many times we miss a message from God by being so absorbed in the things of the world that we just don't hear and we just don't notice. Now, I want you to notice in verses 2 through 8 of our text the intensity that Abraham had about his service to the Lord. I believe one of the greatest needs today for God's people is to manifest an intensity about serving God. I've got a real uneasy feeling, brothers and sisters, that our lackadaisical attitude about the things of God are the very thing that cause people to say, "This is nothing to that. I'm not going to get involved in it because that guy there, he goes to that church all the time and he acts like it's just no big deal and he doesn't really act overly interested in me and overly interested in what the Lord's doing. He just goes and fills his place in the pew. He doesn't even do that sometimes." That lackadaisical attitude is the very kind of thing that causes people to think that there's nothing to the power of God. Is the power of God operating in your life? Have you got more than just a about the things of God? We need to have. I think it's one of the failings of us as God's people. And without that intensity that we see with the Father of the faithful, I think we've got a real problem in our testimony. We'll notice in verses 2 through 8 that Abraham was real attentive, first of all, to the details of those visitors' comfort. He said to them, "Now, let's bring a little water. I'm begging you, let me bring a little water. And wash your feet, And you just rest here under the tree. Now, in the Eastern culture, for somebody to have an opportunity to wash their feet after a dusty trip, that was a great benefit, a great blessing. And for a householder, a landowner to offer that, it was paying great homage and respect to somebody. And so he says, all I want you to do is just, here's some fresh water, you wash your feet, and rest here under the tree. And be with me just long enough for me to serve you in some way. So he was quick to seize on that opportunity. I wonder if we ever have that kind of attitude about the Lord when we have our moments. I wonder when we're sitting down and resting, if we ever say, Lord, let me some way, as I sit right here right now, let me have some way of serving you. Let me have some way of doing something for you. If it's just offering up a moment of praise, if it's just calling upon you and glorifying your name, whatever, let me have some way of waiting on you. That's what we need to be doing. That's what Abraham was doing. I want you to notice also in our verses that he was speedy to engage the Lord when he recognized that he'd come calling. Our book tells us that he ran to meet them from the tent door. Now remember, this guy's over 90 years old. 90-year-old plus, running to meet three visitors. Do we ever, when we know the Lord is beginning to move upon our hearts and to speak to our souls, do we ever, in spirit, run to meet Him? Or do we sit there and say, well, whatever the Lord's going to do, He's going to do. We ought to be running spiritually, brothers and sisters. If the Lord ever inspires us, if He ever seizes upon our heart, if He ever begins to speak to us in any way above and beyond, we ought to just run to the occasion and lay hold upon what God is doing as He comes calling. Notice also he was real speedy in rendering proper respect to the Lord. Our text tells us that he bowed himself toward the ground. Bowed himself toward the ground. That's rendering great obeisance. And doesn't mean he laid down flat, but it's that Middle Eastern bow where the receiver bows over very low to receive those who come. And that's what Abraham did. And he did it speedily. Immediately when he got to the visitors. Notice that he was intense about keeping the Lord there, because he said, if I've found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee. That's like saying, I'm begging you, don't go away. Let me have this time with you here. Do we do that? Is that what's in our hearts? When the Lord impresses a message upon us, when we can feel His presence, do we beg for Him to stay? Or do we feel a little uneasy and kind of be glad when He'll move on away from that intense, intense personal visit with us? I wonder how we do. We ought to be like Abraham. Now he was also speedy to sacrifice his own possessions in the interest of pleasing the Lord. Notice that the Bible tells us here that Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah. And he didn't stop there. He said, make ready quickly. He said, I'm in a hurry. Sarah, I want you to be in a hurry. And so, he was speedy in gathering a sacrifice, providing something for these folks that visited, for the Lord and the angels. So he told her, you get ready too. You make ready quickly the stuff to feed them with. And then it says he ran to his herd. Now, I don't know where his herd was at, but I know it wasn't right out his tent door. 90-plus year old man running off through the field to get to his herd, to get a calf. Ran to his herd and bid his servants prepare a calf. And notice that this kind, brothers and sisters, this kind of speedy response to God, this kind of intensity about the things of God, it's infectious. Notice in our text that when Abraham went to call the young man and get the calf, that the Bible says that that young man, that servant, hasted to dress it. He knew there was hurry in Abraham's heart. He knew there was intensity in what he was doing, and it was infectious. And I believe we can do that with one another. I believe we're so dead that we have not a thing to say about the Lord, not a receptive ear to the coming words of the Lord. If we're dead about those things, we're not going to inspire anybody. But if ever we get excited about the things of God, it will be infectious and we will inspire others. Now, just quickly, I want us to note the outcome of this visit as far as Abraham was concerned. First of all, and this is the reason I read almost the whole chapter to you, he learned something that was vital to his interests from the conversation with the Lord and the angels. And I want you to notice, and if you read over these verses again carefully, I'm not going to take the time to read them, but I want you to notice that Abraham never once mentioned his nephew Lot. But he did mention salvaging the cities of the plain for the sake of the righteous. And that tells me something about Abraham's interest. I believe Abraham was interested in any righteous men in the cities of the plain, but I believe he was interested in those sinners too. Because there's so many ways that Abraham could have gone. He could have said, Lord, just show me where the righteous men are in the city, and I'll go down and bring them out. And then you can go ahead and do that. But he didn't say that. He said, Lord, I'm going to ask you to spare the city for 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10 righteous men. I want you to spare the cities for that. And Abraham must have knew what he was doing. He knew that Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain were full of wicked men. He knew that. But he was praying and asking for the preservation of the whole ball of wax on the basis of somebody righteous living in those cities. Now, I believe his pleading for those sinners that way had purpose to it. We sometimes imagine that he was thinking, well, he's going to save them, and by doing that he's going to save 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10 righteous men. That's usually the way we think about this account. But I want to suggest to you that Abraham was thinking farther afield than that. He was thinking in a broader sense than that. I believe that Abraham had his eye on those purportedly 10 righteous men, yes. But I believe that Abraham was looking at what was beneficial and what was less heart-rending to those 10 righteous men. And I believe when he looked at that, I believe that's why he asked God for the sparing of those cities. We sometimes forget that 10 righteous men anywhere are going to have contacts, associations, connections with some people that aren't so righteous, unsaved people. And when we forget that, we sometimes are so sick of sinners acting like undoubtedly the people of Sodom and Gomorrah acted, that we wish God would just strike them down where they stand. You ever feel that way? I have. We're sick of sin. We want God to do something. We want God to show sinners that He has the power that we say He has. And so we get this idea, I wish God would just strike them down where they are and send the message to the whole world. Let them be on national television when it happens. But when we feel that way, brothers and sisters, we forget, I think, sometimes that there may be righteous souls that'll get terribly affected by that kind of intervention. And I believe that's what Abraham had in mind. You know, as we think about things happening across the world, the awfulness of the tsunami in Japan is still fresh in our mind. And there were thousands that were affected by that. Many, many souls were killed in that. And when that tsunami went through there and just washed a bunch of stuff clean, you and I know that it put a stop to at least a few, if not many, wicked activities acted out by wicked men. We know it did, because in any given population, anywhere, any town, anywhere, there are wicked men acting out evil deeds. And when that tsunami rolled ashore in Japan, you know that it wiped out, it put a stop once and for all of the wicked deeds that those men were perpetrating. But when it happened, how many poor innocent souls were also horribly impacted by the death of those wicked men, by the devastation that was wrought by the tsunami? Maybe even some Christians were horribly impacted, left with scars about what happened when that tsunami came ashore. And that's the way God's judgment often works. I'm not saying the tsunami was the judgment of God, you be the judge. But what I'm saying is it well illustrates how the judgment of God works. And when God causes it to rain, He causes it to rain upon the just and the unjust alike. And you can mark it down that if God works out a large-scale judgment against sin, there's going to be righteous people affected. And I believe Abraham realized that and thought way out there broadly about it and was asking for the preservation of those wicked cities, not so those wicked men could continue to do the wicked things they were doing, but so that the righteous that might be in those cities could be spared the awful nightmare of what would happen if God destroyed the cities. Now, you know, the righteous, had they been killed in the fiery blast upon Sodom and Gomorrah, would have entered immediately into the presence of the Lord. They would have been okay. So Abraham understood that too. But I believe that he was thinking more in terms of the awfulness of the nightmare of the losses that would occur if righteous men were impacted by this. Now, I want you to notice also that Abraham learned something about the extent of the wickedness of the culture of those cities that God had come down to investigate. And by the way, brothers and sisters, God didn't have to come down and investigate to discover what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. When you read this chapter, you seem to think that's what God's doing, that He's not fully sure how wicked they are, so He's come down to get right in the middle of it and find out. That's not really what that's telling us. What it tells us is that any time God knows something like that is going on, He will bring forth proofs. And the proofs to God and to man that those wicked things were being done was to have somebody firsthand from heaven go down there and have those men perpetrate those wickednesses upon those representatives. And that is the proof positive stamp upon heaven that it's so. Just acting out what God knew that they would do. But Abraham learned something about the extent of the wickedness of the culture of the cities of the plain. And here's how he learned it. He said, "Lord, if there's just 10 righteous men, will you not spare the city?" And the Lord said, "Yeah, I'll spare it if there's just 10. And the next morning when Abraham got up and looked out over the plain, it was a big ball of smoke. Abraham wasn't in doubt about what happened. But I'll tell you what Abraham must have thought. He looked out over the plain that morning and he thought, I can guarantee you that he had to have thought there weren't 10 righteous men in there. Because he knew that God would keep His promise to him. But he saw them burning. And that day, that moment, I believe Abraham learned to what extent the wickedness of the cities of the plain had gotten to. And you know something? I don't think, brothers and sisters, that we, as God's people, will ever fully comprehend the awful, corrupted, wicked condition of this world, what it has come to and what it will get to until God executes that final, awful judgment. When we watch the incendiary activity of God upon this wicked earth, when we watch the earth and the heavens melt with fervent heat, we will get a snapshot of how God feels about the wickedness of the earth. That's what Abraham learned that day. He learned how much God hated wickedness and how wicked Sodom was.